She died after eating breakfast at a sleepover. Bernice Nantandawamala had just turned 3. Tonight, police allege that cereal had been poisoned. Good evening. The young girl was staying at a friend's house. That friend also becoming sick.
A 45-year-old man now charged in the case. Investigators say the substance involved came from the man's work. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live in Scarborough tonight with more. Scott.
Michelle, there's still a lot of unanswered questions in this case, unanswered at least publicly. Those answers will likely come now that the process has moved to the courts. Police have charged the man they believe is responsible for the incident. The mother of the young girl who died said she is praying for justice.
Her name was Bernice Nantandawamala, and she died in March, just 1 week after her 3rd birthday, rushed to hospital by her mother following a sleepover at a friend's place in the same Scarborough apartment building where she lived, a sleepover that ended with both girls eating a breakfast cereal and having severe reactions. Bernice began vomiting and was having trouble breathing.
What happened? She passed away. That's what happened.
Bernice's mother was searching for answers when she spoke to CTV News at the time of the incident. This weekend, police provided some.
This past weekend, Francis Nguyen, 45 years of age, of Toronto, was arrested with 2 counts of administering a noxious substance to endanger life, as well as unlawfully cause bodily harm, 2 counts, and criminal negligence causing death.
Police say both of the girls who ate the cereal were familiar with the accused, but won't confirm what the connection was, nor will they identify the substance that's alleged to have been put in the cereal.
The man obtained the controlled substance from his place of employment, and that was part of the investigation where they later determined that same controlled substance was found in the cereal that the 2 children consumed.
Reached by phone today, Bernice's mom told CTV News, quote, "All I am praying for is my daughter's justice."
And police say the other young girl who ate the cereal has now recovered after a lengthy hospital stay. Reporting live in Scarborough, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Scott. And our online team is keeping track of every development with this story. You can find that coverage at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
An arrest has been made in a shooting that shocked the city. 3 children struck by bullets at a weekend birthday party. Gunfire erupted in a crowded Rexdale backyard Saturday night when witnesses say an argument broke out during the party. A 5-year-old girl remains in critical condition after being shot in the head. A 1-year-old boy whose head was grazed by a bullet has been released from hospital. So too has an 11-year-old boy shot in the buttocks. 24-year-old Damar Cadogan was also hurt. He is now facing 4 charges. They include discharging a firearm with intent and possessing a restricted or prohibited firearm without a license and registration.
Police are also investigating a fatal shooting in North York. A man in his 20s was shot at Clearview Heights and Drithui Drive just after 12:30 this morning. Members of the homicide unit are investigating, but so far, no suspects are in custody. Residents say they heard several shots.
It was like bang, 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 like all in a row. Like, it was scary.
Last Sunday night, a man was shot and killed near an apartment building on the same street. Candles and flowers from a recent memorial for the victim of that shooting could be seen near today's crime scene.
Next to the details Canadians eager to travel have been waiting for, our country is easing the rules.
And it comes as our province sees its lowest daily COVID case count since September. Public Health Ontario is logging 270 new cases in its most recent update, for a total of more than 542,000 over the course of the pandemic. 486 more cases are considered resolved, raising that number to nearly 530,000. 3 more deaths are linked to COVID-19. Putting that figure at 9,022.
Looking at tonight's numbers across the GTA, the city of Toronto has 47 new cases, with 42 in Peel Region and 22 in York. There are 12 new cases in Niagara Region, with 11 in Durham, 9 in Halton, and 7 in Hamilton.
The border remains closed to non-essential travel until July 21st.
But changes are on the horizon for Canadians and permanent residents who are fully vaccinated. CTV's Ottawa Bureau Chief Joyce Napier reports.
It's a soft launch, a prudent first step on the long road to reopening the border.
Phase 1 of the approach that we are taking to ease border measures will begin on July 5th.
And as of July 5th, fully vaccinated Canadian citizens and permanent residents will be able to return to this country without going through a mandatory quarantine.
Fully vaccinated travelers will not be required to take a COVID-19 test on day 8 or stay at a government-authorized hotel.
A loosening of restrictions. But fully vaccinated Canadians will still need a pre-departure COVID test and will need to have a second test upon arrival and wait for the result. If it's negative, then no need to self-isolate or quarantine.
In essence, it's going to give Canadians the ability now to be comfortable, at least fully vaccinated Canadians.
But for Canadians with children under 12 years of age who are not eligible for COVID-19 vaccines, it's a different story. If both parents are fully vaccinated, those children traveling with them will still have to get COVID tests and self-isolate for 14 days.
So the parents will have significant protection against COVID-19, but the kids don't. So the kids can certainly bring COVID-19 back to Canada, and that's why they're quarantining.
Frustrating also for fully vaccinated U.S. citizens. They will still be banned from entering Canada at least until July 21st, unless their travel is deemed essential, whereas Canadians have been able to travel to the States throughout the pandemic.
Go right across the United States, and the fact that Canadians are treating U.S. Americans differently, even when Americans are fully vaccinated, is a source of great frustration.
As of July 5th, those travelers returning to Canada will have to download the mandatory Arrive Can app and include proof of vaccination and COVID test results. Failing to do so could result in a fine and even an order to quarantine. Joyce Napier, CTV News, Ottawa.
For many businesses here in Ontario, a loosening of the rules can't come soon enough.
In particular, those that rely on tourism, looking to avoid a second summer of restrictions and closures. CTV's Raheem Ladani is live in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, as we heard in Joyce's reporting, the underlying argument we're hearing from businesses is they believe a fully vaccinated person should be allowed to cross the border regardless if they're Canadian or American, and that Ontario's tourism industry will continue to struggle until the guidelines change.
On the heels of Ottawa's relaxed travel rules for fully vaccinated people entering Canada, some are left wanting more.
It really does miss the bigger question that's on the minds of small business owners, and that's what the heck is going to happen? When are we going to allow international guests?
With the Canada-U.S. border still closed until at least July 21st, Ontario businesses relying on tourism are missing out on their peak season for the second straight summer.
In Niagara Falls, of course, we're the number one leisure destination in Canada. And of the 14 million people that come here, 25% are typically Americans, and they represent 50% of the revenue.
And on the other side of the falls, the closure is also impacting day-to-day business.
It is as much a tourism issue as it is just a regular economy issue, where we have so much trade back and forth with neighbors in Niagara Falls, Ontario, and the Greater Niagara region.
Back in Canada, Destination Toronto found the pandemic has cost the city more than $8 billion due to a drop in retail, food, and accommodations.
But we've also seen, you know, over 500,000 Canadians lose their jobs because our businesses are closed. And so every delay in getting this border open has a huge impact on, you know, recovery.
Border city mayors say the federal government is leaving them in the dark without sharing a clear reopening strategy, something they say is needed to plan their recovery.
We need to see the federal plan. Trust us. Don't treat us like children. Tell us what the plan is, and then let us engage in that plan, and then let's implement that plan.
A plan they hope includes opening up this summer.
Now, the Canadian Chamber of Commerce is also weighing in, saying keeping the border closed is out of step with science. And it's calling on Ottawa to produce a reopening plan using, quote, common sense. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thanks, Raheem. On the vaccine front, more Ontarians are logging on, looking for their second shot.
The eligibility expanding once again with a focus on Moderna doses in many places this week. CTV's Sean Lathong is live outside Downsview Arena tonight with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, this vaccine clinic behind me is appointment only. Many people here getting their first dose being Pfizer, and then some were surprised to find out today they were only being offered Moderna. But experts are saying it's nothing to worry about.
With the vaccine rollout moving at full speed, a slight change has come for some receiving a second dose.
I had Pfizer for the first shot and Moderna for the second shot.
At many clinics in Toronto and Peel, Moderna shots are all that are being offered, this because of a 2 to 3 day delay in a Pfizer shipment.
I was a little bit hesitant at first, but at the end of the day, it's all the same on the piece of paper. So, I mean, if this is what it's going to take to get everything moving again, I'm totally down.
Those who arrived at this clinic at Downsview Park were greeted with the news that only Moderna shots were available. Gunnar and Inga Rebesniks had a Pfizer shot the first time.
It was a bit of a surprise, and so my wife decided to wait for the Pfizer, and I just took the Moderna.
And mix and match doses are getting a mixed review.
We don't feel comfortable doing that, so we're just going to go with the Pfizer again.
I'm fine with Moderna. My first shot was Pfizer.
I wish I had received an email or a text message earlier so that I could check with my doctors beforehand.
Both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines use mRNA technology. According to the most recent recommendations from the National Advisory Committee on Immunization, if the same mRNA vaccine is not readily available or unknown, another mRNA vaccine can be considered interchangeable and should be offered to complete the vaccine series.
When we look at the safety profile for both of these vaccines, when we look at the side effect profile for both of these vaccines, and when we look at the effectiveness of both of these vaccines, they are virtually identical.
While there may be some hesitancy to mix doses, Ontario continues to vaccinate at a very high rate. 4 days last week, there were over 200,000 doses given and many more appointments coming.
As of today, Pfizer and Moderna recipients who are 18 plus with a first dose on or before May 9th can book a second. Eligibility for anyone who received AstraZeneca is 8 weeks from the first dose. And on Wednesday, any adult in Delta variant hotspots with a first dose on or before May 30th will be eligible to book dose two. And with the number of vaccinated people growing rapidly, many are happy to just get the process over with.
I'd rather get the first, second dose that I can rather than try to wait to, you know, get the same type of vaccine.
Entering summer with a bit of optimism.
And there continues to be a steady stream of people coming in here to get their second dose or their first dose. So if there is some hesitancy with mixing and matching, it does seem to be moving forward. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. The Ministry of Health says more than 184,000 doses were administered yesterday, raising Ontario's total to more than 12 million. That's a combination of first and second shots. More than 9.6 million people in Ontario have received at least one dose, an increase of 35,000. And nearly 2.9 million people are considered fully vaccinated, a jump of nearly 150,000.
Meanwhile, Toronto Western Hospital has declared an outbreak with people partially or fully vaccinated, including in those tested positive for the virus. According to the hospital's website, the outbreak is in the area of 6A, with 4 patients and 3 staff members affected. The majority of the cases are believed to be the Delta variant, with further testing to come. Hospital officials say those affected are either asymptomatic or experiencing mild symptoms.
Also tonight, marking National Indigenous Peoples Day by breaking ground. A new hub for healthcare, housing, and more support in this city in just a few minutes. To the forecast, Lindsay, a hot start to the work week.
It certainly was, Nathan. We had some wet weather to start off the day as well. And then just recently, we had some isolated showers move through parts of the GTA along a cold front. No thunderstorms. There was potential, but the active weather predominantly today has been in eastern Ontario and southern Quebec, where there's even been reports of at least one tornado. Behind this cold front that's bringing the isolated showers, very strong winds gusting to about 60 kilometers per hour right now in the city of Toronto and starting to come out of the north. As a result, temperatures are falling as we speak. We're currently still in the 20s at Pearson International and the island, but earlier today it felt like the mid-30s. Big change for tomorrow. We'll talk all about it coming up. Michelle, I'll send it over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. The man facing terrorism charges in the deaths of 4 members of a Muslim family in London has had his case put over until next Monday. 20-year-old Nathaniel Veltman faces 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of attempted murder that prosecutors allege constitute an act of terrorism. Police say the attack was motivated by Islamophobia. Salman Afzal, his wife Medea, their 15-year-old daughter Yumna, and her grandmother Talat Afzal were killed while out for an evening walk. The couple's 9-year-old son Fayez was seriously hurt.
Elsewhere, the victim of an alleged homophobic attack on Toronto Island is speaking out after the arrest of a man in connection with the incident. 24-year-old Elijah McGibbon was arrested Saturday and charged with aggravated assault. He's accused of attacking 24-year-old David Gomez on June 5th. Gomez suffered serious injuries and says his attacker made homophobic comments prior to the assault. Police say they want to speak to two women who they believe were in the area at the time of the assault.
In a new statement, Gomez writes, "Given the circumstances surrounding the incident, I have no question I was a target because I am a gay man. This attack was a hate crime, not just against me, but against all 2S LGBTQ plus people. I am somewhat comforted the police investigation led to an arrest this past weekend. I will continue to cooperate with the police investigation and want the individuals responsible for this assault to be held accountable."
Still ahead, the plan for spectators at the Summer Olympics. Officials announcing who will be allowed, along with strict rules during and after Olympic events.
This marks National Indigenous Peoples Day, and in Toronto, the city is breaking ground on a major hub that will bring healthcare, skills training, and childcare all under one roof.
It's the first of its kind in Ontario. CTV's John Woodward is live from the Donlands with more. John.
Nathan, there are tens of thousands of Indigenous people living here in Toronto, and they were hit harder by COVID-19, partly because officials say they didn't have access to a healthcare system geared directly to them. This is an attempt to change that.
The shawl dancers and this ceremony were meant to celebrate National Indigenous Peoples Day and the building of a new healthcare hub in the Donlands. But on this day, recent events made it hard to celebrate.
Our collective hearts shattered and trembled upon learning about the findings of the remains of 215 Indigenous children buried on the grounds of the Kamloops Indian Residential School.
A residential school system that tried to tear Indigenous children from their culture, introducing trauma felt even now.
There is an estimated 70,000 Indigenous people living in the Greater Toronto area, and the unemployment rate of off-reserve Indigenous people is 11%. Double that of non-Indigenous Canadians.
A population hit 20% harder by COVID-19, officials say, partly because of a lack of trust of the broader healthcare system.
Very, you know, reluctant to attend to healthcare facilities where they're discriminated against, where there is racism. So, you know, unfortunately, that will contribute to their health and well-being in the long run as well.
The new Indigenous hub will have a 45,000-square-foot Anishinaabe Health Center, a job training institute, child care, purpose-built rental, and condos, all on what was a site for the Pan Am Games. Part of an effort to undo centuries of racism and neglect.
And I think it's time, it's high time, that we rose to a higher standard than what we have been doing.
Canada is our country, and certainly the homelands in the Toronto area, but we have no place to gather. That we can call our own in our home. So this project represents that ability to be able to do that.
The people here hope the new center will be another thing to be proud of on future National Indigenous Peoples Days when it's completed in 2022.
There have been programs that target the Indigenous population specifically, including a vaccine clinic yesterday, but doctors say one big gap is the data. That's not collected well enough for them to know whether many of these measures are working. Reporting live from the Donlands, I'm John Woodward. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, John. This year's National Indigenous Peoples Day is being marked as Canadians recognize a shameful history, part of this country's past.
Highlighting the need for education and commitment toward reconciliation. CTV's Zoraida Allman joins us in the studio tonight with more. Zoraida.
Michelle and Nathan, the Prime Minister issued a statement today. Part of it says that while today is a time to celebrate, it's also an acknowledgement that there is still much work to do on the journey to reconciliation. For a quarter of a century, this day has been observed, a celebration of the culture and contributions of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples. For non-Indigenous people, an opportunity for learning.
And this is a time when we have and give permission to ask difficult questions, to ask challenging things, to talk in a safe environment, to do and learn without judgment.
Observances took place across the country.
In Montreal, a free concert was held featuring Indigenous performers. In Toronto this morning, elders hosted a walkthrough of the sunrise ceremony.
A very significant ceremony for us, where we, you know, acknowledge a new day and share our gratitude for all that we have.
This year's observance is marked by one significant difference, the discovery of the bodies of 215 Indigenous children on the grounds of a residential school in Kamloops.
It's a time where people are feeling grief as a huge backdrop to whatever celebration they may wish to feel.
In Vancouver, they gathered outside the art gallery, the site of a memorial to the 215 children. Today's virtual ceremony in Toronto, a moment for both celebration and reflection.
As we continue to mourn these children and all those known and unknown who never returned home from Canada's residential and day schools and all those who survived, it is our hope that this ceremony will provide an opportunity for healing.
And yet another opportunity to have meaningful discussions about the systemic inequities that still exist and what we can do to help effect change.
And tonight, the CN Tower and the Toronto sign will both be lit in yellow, dark blue, dark red, and white to mark Indigenous Peoples Day and National Indigenous History Month. I'm Zoraida Allman. Nathan, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Zoraida. Manitoba is spending $2.5 million to locate unmarked burial sites at former residential schools in the province. The government will also consider other initiatives to support Indigenous communities through the process. There were 17 residential schools and 114 day schools in Manitoba. At least 338 children died at residential schools there, according to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But the number is likely higher. In recent years, 104 unmarked graves were found at the Brandon Residential School west of Winnipeg.
A weightlifter from New Zealand will be the first transgender athlete to compete at the Olympics. Laurel Hubbard will also be the oldest weightlifter at next month's Tokyo Games. She will be ranked fourth in the women's heavyweight division. Hubbard transitioned 8 years ago at the age of 35. She has since met all of the requirements of the International Olympic Committee's regulations for trans athletes and fair competition.
Meanwhile, Richmond Hill's Denis Shapovalov decided to skip the Tokyo Games. The young tennis star tweeted, "Hey everyone, after careful consideration, I wanted to let you know that I will not be participating in the Olympics this year. Representing Canada means the world to me, but due to the current situation, my team and I have decided this is the best decision for everyone's safety." Canadian Olympic officials say Shapovalov will be missed, but they respect his decision.
Denis has every right to make his own decisions, and the way an athlete is going to integrate with their whole team is going to be unique and different at these games. I totally support his decision, but I, you know, as every Canadian would be, we're going to be disappointed not to have him on Team Canada.
Several other tennis players have passed on previous Olympics. Canada's Milos Raonic pulled out of the 2016 Rio Games over concerns about the Zika virus.
Well, there will be thousands of spectators in the stands when our Olympic athletes compete next month.
But all fans will be local and they'll have to wear masks, go straight home afterwards, and not make any loud noises at the venues. CTV's Grace Lee reports from Osaka.
It's the announcement Japanese fans have been waiting for. Olympic organizers revealed today venues will be allowed to fill up to 50% of their seats with spectators. In some stadiums, that means up to 10,000 people will be allowed to watch the games. It's a move that goes directly against the recommendation of Japan's top medical advisor. In Tokyo, reactions have been mixed. This woman says she's scared of clusters from people gathering. She'd prefer no spectators at all. Others say up to 10,000 fans shouldn't be an issue, since sports events with spectators are already taking place in Japan. Tokyo 2020 President Seiko Hashimoto says the decision isn't set in stone. Spectators could still be barred if Japan were to enter yet another state of emergency. Organizers this weekend showcased the Olympic Village, which in just a few weeks will be welcoming tens of thousands of people from around the world. But COVID-19 is already proving to be difficult to avoid. On Sunday, a member of Uganda's Olympic team tested positive for the virus and barred entry into Japan. The first to be infected among athletes arriving for the Tokyo Games. Grace Lee, CTV News, Osaka.
Still ahead, they're invasive and overwhelming. Gypsy moths are taking over parts of Toronto and beyond. More on the potential remedies and what to look for if you're worried they may be heading for your backyard.
Tonight, Pat Foran coming up on Consumer Alert. As more people get vaccinated, some are planning summer holidays. Last year, hundreds of Canadians got caught in online rental scams, and officials say thieves are at it again. We can tell you what to watch out for. I'll have that story just ahead.
The Atlantic hurricane season continues on, and this is an update on Tropical Storm Claudette. It is moving away from the Outer Banks, still south of Nantucket, but it is expected to sideswipe Nova Scotia before eventually impacting Newfoundland as a remnant low. Coastal Nova Scotia has potential for heavy rain and gusty winds through tomorrow. A little closer to home, we are looking at some cooler air over Ontario. We'll talk about potential for frost and how long this temperature pattern could last coming up here on CTV News. We'll be right back.
As more people get vaccinated and some travel restrictions are lifted, you may be tempted to take a vacation this summer.
If you're thinking of a last-minute cottage rental, just be aware that online rental scams have increased 15% during the pandemic. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, rental scams were a huge problem last summer as many people stayed within the province. Fraudsters used fake ads on social media sites to scam almost 400 victims out of more than $500,000 in deposits. Many Canadians are warming up to the idea of traveling, but most plan to stay within the country or their home province. That means some will be renting cottages, Airbnbs, and hotel rooms. If you're planning a vacation, cybersecurity experts say beware of online rental scams.
Unfortunately, cyber criminals and scammers are very aware of that, that people want to get away to lakes or remote and rural parts of the country.
Internet security company ESET says to avoid vacation rental scams, only use reputable booking sites, don't communicate off the rental platform, don't pay with a wire transfer or e-transfer, and beware if there is pressure to pay quickly.
If somebody's offering a vacation rental through social media and they want you to pay in cash or a wire transfer, then I would not trust it.
Online fraud has increased during the pandemic. A new survey by TransUnion found when it came to digital fraud attempts, financial services fraud increased by 217%. It also found that travel and leisure fraud increased by 49%.
The rate of attempted fraud is not just solely to financial services, it's across different vectors.
TransUnion says consumers need to be vigilant to protect their private information and to make sure they don't click on suspicious links in texts, emails, or ads.
I think that the fraudsters are very aware of some of the vulnerabilities that they can tap into.
Following a rash of vacation rental scams last year, the OPP issued a warning saying renters should only deal with the owner of the cottage or a reputable rental service and to try and view the cottage in person before putting down a deposit. And a survey by the Travel Health Insurance Association also found many Canadians are interested in traveling to the U.S. 37% said the U.S. will be the first country they visit when they resume traveling. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, we are officially into summer now, and I feel like we should all take a minute, take note, because we're going to blink. And then summer's going to be over. So here we are. It's the beginning. There's so much ahead of us.
You're so right. You have to take advantage of every day. Even when it rains, it's usually not a washout, Lindsay.
It's true. And on a day like this, it was very hot. Some might have considered it uncomfortable. But tomorrow will be like a breath of fresh air. So we can enjoy the summer season in many different ways. And if you're once again waiting for rain, I have some good news in your long-range forecast as well. Weather is brought to you by Trane for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. it's hard to stop a train. So how hot did it get? We managed to climb to about 28 degrees today here in the city of Toronto. The record to beat was 34. We didn't get there, but it felt like it with the humidity of certainly a muggy day today. But we've now had a cold front move through. Temperatures are starting to fall, and we are looking at an overnight low in Toronto of 11 degrees. That's cooler than normal, and we're talking single-digit overnight lows in some places further to the north. There's also a frost advisory in effect for northern parts of Ontario. Yes, in late June and on the first day of summer, the first full day anyway. We'll say goodbye to the cold front. High pressure will be somewhat at play for tomorrow. It's going to make for some decent conditions, mix of sun and cloud. At times, there will likely be more cloud than sun. Our best chance of maybe a pop-up shower, that's not going to come until we make our way into the day on Wednesday. And even at that, it's not a sure thing. We're talking more long-range forecast when it comes to significant rainfall. But here's a look at some of tomorrow's forecast daytime highs into the teens in some communities. Caledon, 18 degrees, 17 in Innisfil, and 19 in Ajax. Here's a look at what you can expect in eastern sections of our province. 19, for example, in Cobourg. Compare that to the norm for this time of year, which is around 25 in Toronto. So cooler than normal. 7-day forecast looks like this. Already looking ahead to the weekend where it will be warm once again, but unsettled right through to the early part of next week. That's your look at the weather. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thanks, Lindsay. From backyards to popular parks, the gypsy moth is wreaking havoc across the province.
But there are some remedies you can try at home. CTV's Saran Fennell has more.
But you'll see him like all along.
Rebecca Pincus loves nature, but the gypsy moth is one insect she has no tolerance for.
I have changed my running routes in the park because there have been some paths that after it rains, the caterpillars fall and get squished and there's caterpillar excrement.
David Dukiewicz says last year was the worst gypsy moth infestation Ontario has ever seen.
This year, we're waiting for the data to come in.
He says there are some remedies to help get rid of a gypsy moth, but it depends what part of the life cycle it's in. Between August and April, the insect is in the egg stage.
If they can find those egg masses, is just to scrape them off the tree with a butter knife works.
Next comes the caterpillar stage, arguably the worst.
If you stop and just listen to the trees, you can hear them chewing. I mean, it's just like terrifying. And one of my kids was also quite terrified of the whole thing.
You can pick up this biopesticide at a local garden center or hardware store, spray the tree down in early spring.
The caterpillars actually have to ingest the biopesticide in May in order for it to have any effect in June or whenever.
He says using BTK now would be a waste of money because there aren't as many leaves for the insect to eat. But there's another method.
Right now, actually in June, is the perfect time to start using those burlap trap methods.
Wrapping a burlap band at chest level around the tree will attract caterpillars looking for shade.
I would actually check it at least once or twice a day.
Toss the caterpillars into soapy water. Dukiewicz says even a vacuum or broom can work too. For Pincus, who views High Park as a sanctuary.
The raspberry plants and my rhubarb plants have both been decimated.
A change in life cycle can't come soon enough. Saran Fennell, CTV News.
Also tonight, an expected advantage to pandemic protocols. The encouraging trend as doctors notice a decline in other infections and why that could mean more mask wearing in the months and years ahead. The surge of interest in getting a COVID vaccine continues, but what about those who can't go to a hospital or a pop-up clinic?
As our health reporter Pauline Chan tells us, there is a way to bring the vaccine to some of Toronto's most vulnerable residents.
Here we go. One, two, three.
It's a second shot for Paul Rizzo, much to his relief.
It does, mostly because I can't get around that well, so that's fantastic that they come here.
This mobile health unit first started touring around Parkdale last fall, visiting local shelters and drop-in centers to bring health care and even socks and toothbrushes to people who wouldn't usually access the health care system. Rizzo was kept home with pandemic restrictions.
Because I have a heart condition and I don't want to take a chance.
For others, lack of an address, internet access, or lack of comfort with hospitals or clinics made booking a vaccination impossible.
They know who we are, and so we can come here and offer our services because we have built that rapport with our clients.
Registered practical nurse Raymond McCarrag says a good supply of vaccines has allowed them to offer shots since March.
We're able to expedite the second dose much quicker. That's why we're here today.
It's a bit of a logistical challenge to bring the vaccines out to the community, but McCarrag says it's also very fulfilling.
You see the smiles on people's faces. They're very grateful for what we've done for them. And all of that tiredness just melts away.
The mobile health unit has administered almost 1,800 doses of vaccine since March. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Not many would have seen this coming. Scientists say there has been a dramatic drop in people with chronic lung diseases during the pandemic.
Some who have asthma and COPD, for example, are not getting sick. Instead, they're becoming healthier. CTV's Avis Favreau reports.
Around the world, doctors have noticed a curious trend. Fewer patients with chronic lung diseases like asthma and COPD are getting seriously ill, like Louise McDonald.
I've stayed so healthy, I'm probably healthier than I've been in a long time.
Most years, she's ended up in emergency a few times with viral lung infections, making her COPD worse. But since the pandemic, that's all changed. She's back playing golf. Doctors even cut back on her medications.
Clovant, which I used morning and evening, has now been eliminated.
Doctors think the masks, hand washing, and social distancing have stopped not just COVID, but all the usual colds and flu viruses that would trigger lung infections and pneumonia.
They're staying safer, they're not in close contact with other people, and therefore they're not getting influenza, they're not getting rhinovirus, which are the common cold viruses, and they're not getting the other infections that set them off and make them so sick.
In Alberta, doctors saw a 30% drop in hospitalizations among those with chronic lung conditions, raising questions, could these measures be an enduring way of protecting these patients and ease pressure on the health system?
The effect is staggering. The number of hospitalizations that we've prevented related to COPD and non-COVID pneumonia actually exceeds the number of patients that have been hospitalized for COVID, at least in Alberta's 15 busiest hospitals.
And so there are lung patients like Louise talking about keeping some of these pandemic measures long after restrictions are lifted.
I honestly think I will continue to wear masks when I'm in public.
With doctors designing studies to see if this is indeed a silver lining to the pandemic for those with chronic lung disease. Avis Favreau, CTV News, Toronto.
The fastest man in the world has slowed down long enough to share some very happy news. Usain Bolt has announced the birth of twin sons. The sprinter posted this photo showing him with his partner Cassie Bennett, their daughter Olympia Lightning, and the two additions to the family. Now, it's unclear when exactly they were born, but the twins have been named Thunder and Saint Leo. The 11-time world champion retired from competition in 2017.
Naomi Osaka is taking a break from tennis to focus on her mental health, but the young superstar remains very much in the spotlight. The 23-year-old is on the cover of Vogue Japan. She's kept a relatively low profile since withdrawing from the French Open last month. But today, we got our first glimpse of the cover, as well as a few other pictures from the photo shoot. Osaka pulled out of Roland Garros after refusing to do news conferences. She revealed she's experienced anxiety and depression. Today, Osaka touched base with her fans with a tweet. She says, "Hi guys, popping out to post this Vogue Japan cover. Hope you're all doing well and staying safe. The four-time Grand Slam champion will miss Wimbledon, but plans to return in time for the Olympics in Tokyo."
The Screen Actors Guild Awards is returning to a two-hour format. The 2022 edition of the SAG Awards will air February 27th. It was a one-hour all-virtual format this year. The awards recognize the best performances in television and film. The top television acting honors in the comedy category went to the cast of the Canadian-made sitcom Schitt's Creek.
Steven Spielberg is teaming up with Netflix. The director's production company has reached a multi-year deal to supply movies to the streaming giant. But the Oscar winner will continue to direct movies for Universal Pictures. Financial terms of Netflix's deal with Amblin Partners were not disclosed.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Men's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
After the break, the Buffalo Bills backtracking on a decision as they look ahead to next season and what that means for the vaccination status of fans taking in the game in person.
The man obtained the controlled substance from his place of employment, and that was part of the investigation where they later determined that same controlled substance was found in the cereal that the two children consumed.
Updating our top stories, a Toronto man has been charged after a three-year-old girl died in March after eating tainted cereal. Police allege a noxious substance was put into the cereal.
Phase one of the approach that we are taking to ease border measures will begin on July 5th.
Fully vaccinated Canadian citizens and permanent residents will be able to return home without a mandatory quarantine, but they will still need a pre-departure COVID test and a second one upon arrival.
It's time, it's high time that we rose to a higher standard than what we have been doing.
A new Indigenous hub is being built in Toronto. It will have a 45,000 square foot health center, a job training institute, and a child care center. There will also be rentals and condos, all on what was a site for the Pan Am Games.
And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. As Ottawa announces new rules for fully vaccinated Canadian travelers, the tourism industry is watching closely.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by co-anchors Nick Dixon and Reshmi Nair. Nick, you'll be getting reaction from the mayor of Niagara Falls.
That's right. The mayor of Niagara Falls is going to join us along with an industry, a couple of excerpts from the industry, the tourism industry, because, you know, Nathan, as much as Canadians can come in, there's still no indication of when international travelers can come to Canada, which is, of course, is a big part of the tourism business here. And also the benchmarks weren't even laid out today. Benchmarks that the science advisory table to the federal government have kind of indicated could be available. Feds haven't offered them, so we'll get into that.
And Reshmi, today, we mentioned it earlier in the newscast, is National Indigenous Peoples Day. And you'll be talking about a fundraiser, raising awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Tell us more.
Yes, you'll meet a woman in St. Catharines, Ontario, who's been deeply impacted by missing, murdered Indigenous women and girls. And she's launched this fundraiser to raise awareness and also celebrate the resilience of Indigenous peoples. We'll talk about that on CP24 tonight.
We look forward to it. Thank you. And CP24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up to 80.90 U.S. American benchmark oil gained more than $2 to $73.66 a barrel. And the TSX Composite Index gained 156 points to close at 20,156.
The hockey world is mourning the loss of Stanley Cup champion Tom Kervers. The 58-year-old passed away today following a battle with lung cancer. He had been an assistant general manager with the Minnesota Wild since 2018. The Minnesota native won the Cup with Montreal in 1986, but he also played for other teams, including New Jersey, Toronto, the Islanders, and Vancouver.
Buffalo Bills fans will not have to be vaccinated to attend games next season. That reverses an announcement in April that required vaccines for entry. But the Erie County executive says the new decision is based on fewer new COVID-19 cases, low hospitalizations, and good immunization rates. Non-vaccinated people will also be allowed into the stadium for other events.
Just ahead, hitting the road for reconciliation. A bike ride heading to Brantford and where the money raised from this fundraiser will go. It's time now for Toronto Together and a ride for reconciliation.
A group of cyclists preparing for a 215-kilometer journey to honour the children buried at a former residential school in Kamloops and support the Indigenous community here in this city.
It's a very small gesture for what, the children that lived in these schools, what they went through was truly, truly horrible. And this is really like, it's a small thing we can do to say we're sorry.
The upcoming Every Child Matters ride will travel 215 kilometers, one for every child recently discovered in BC. Participants will begin at High Park, making their way to the Mohawk Institute Residential School in Brantford. The fundraiser is being organized through Canada Helps and Procter & Gamble Canada.
This is one way to become involved in directly supporting
40-plus charities that do work in community from coast to coast to coast.
Money raised from this particular ride will support the new home for Anishinaabe Health Toronto, which we highlighted earlier in John Woodward's report. More than $19,000 has been raised so far.
Well, we are in the midst of a cool down. Bring us up to speed, Lindsay.
Well, it's a nice evening for a bike ride, Michelle and Nathan. We're seeing a diminished now threat of thunderstorms or showers. Here's the satellite and radar. It is still very windy outside, though, and those winds are now coming out of the northwest. So that's contributing to our cool down. How much cooler? Tomorrow, we could stay in the teens as far as a daytime high, maybe making it to about 19 degrees or 20 in the city of Toronto. And then the 7-day forecast looks like this. Gradually, we'll see temperatures climb back up into the mid or even upper 20s before we're finished with this week. But then the unsettled weather looks like it's going to begin just in time for next weekend. That's your 7-day forecast. Michelle and Nathan, back to you.
Thanks, Lindsay. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight with Rashmi Nair and Nick Dixon begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.